Thank you. the heart, and we ignore our heart, and we have all of these dynamics and desires, deep desires going on beneath the surface that we don't pay attention to, that we don't understand, and we live separated, divorced from our hearts. We live as hollow men so often in this age, and Eldridge reminds us that those desires, those deep desires, are good.
Right.
Your heart is good, and that we're meant to live from the heart to be fully alive.
Right. Pastor Victor, how are you?
Doing well, thanks. Yeah, good.
Before to coming to you to ask you some question, to introduce you, did you know this book? Did you read this book?
I have heard of the book, and I've been recommended the book. I have not read the book, but I certainly, I know when Valerio mentioned it, I was like, oh no, that's from all the people who I trust in terms of, they said that's a great book. So I was, it's great. It's a good reminder to me, and I love what you're saying too. It really resonates with me.
Right. Does it remind you any other books like that you read it, or even not necessarily religion book? I mean,
Well, I haven't read this one, but so I'm not 100% sure it's all there, but I think that topic in terms of living out our dreams and becoming the people who God's created us to be, I think we find freedom and hope, and I think it's one of the biggest issues of our time is people struggle with, I think all of us do, with identity and who we are, and being okay with that, and then that our hopes and our dreams, living out those things, also can bring honor to God in the way He's created us. So,
right. Father, I ask, like I do every week, to my guests, to bring to us some music that you have in your heart. I know you like this band is called Need to Breathe, and Wasteland.
Yes, Wasteland is the title of the first song. Yeah, that's right.
Why you choose this song?
Need to Breathe is a Christian band, although they don't present themselves as kind of typical praise and worship. They're a little bit more mainstream. Some of their music plays on regular music radio stations, popular music. So they're very subtle about their message, but they also, for me at least, speak to the heart through the lyrics and through their music. So this song Wasteland, I think, describes some of the experience of being lost.
Yes.
You know, going through life in kind of a this idea of being separated from our heart. From being, you know, struggling to survive, and then there's a sign of hope. You'll hear in the lyrics.
Let's listen it.
God breaks through. All right.
I'm the first one in line to die. When the cavalry comes, yeah, it feels like the great divide has already come. Yeah, I'm wasting my way through days, losing youth along the way. Oh, if God is on my side, oh, if God is on my side, oh, if God is on my side, who can be against me? There was a greatness I felt for a while, but somehow it changed. Some kind of blindness I used to protect me from all of my stains. Yeah, I wish this was vertical. It just feels like I'm falling slow. If God is on my side, then who can be against me? Yeah, in this wasteland where I'm living, there is a crack in the door filled with all of these people I meet, it seems like they're fine. Yeah, in some ways I hope that they're not, and their hearts are like mine. Yeah, it's wrong when it seems like work to belong, all I feel is hurt. Oh, if God is on my side, yeah, if God is on my side, oh, if God is on my side, who can be against me? In this wasteland where I'm living, there is a crack in the door filled with light, and it's all that I need to get by. Yeah, in this wasteland where I'm living, there is a crack in the door filled with light.
Wasteland by Need to Breathe. Very nice song, Father. Very nice. Pastor Victor, what is your church?
We meet up at Simon Fraser University. Also, have a congregation downtown in the Woodwards area. Mm. So in Burnaby. And then there's a smaller congregation or service in Coquitlam area. Oh. So, yeah.
So it's expanding.
Yeah, it's expanding and just growing a little bit.
That's awesome.
A lot of young adults, students come along. So it's good times.
Mm. Awesome. So you pray in few places.
Correct, yeah.
Like SFU campus. I know there is Interfaith Center. Mm-hmm. And I have friends there. So I know Interfaith Center, I know you. And your church is called The Point, right?
Correct, yeah.
Why The Point?
The name is... comes before I was around, but it was based on the idea of lighthouses. You got Point Grey Lighthouse, a number of these different lighthouses that have the name Point in around the city, and the idea sort of being light in a city and helping people find direction.
Yes.
So that was sort of the idea that came from the idea for The Point.
Yes. Victor, probably I already told you, but I was telling to Father Brian this morning that, I'm Italian, and actually Father Brian has an Italian
Italian. I have a quarter, 25%.
Yeah, from Italy, right?
From Calabria.
From Calabria. Even my mom is from Calabria.
Oh, we're cousins.
Yeah, exactly. Calabria is, Italy is like a booth,
mm-hmm.
and Calabria is the show.
Uh-huh.
The soul?
Top of the beach.
Yeah. The show. The soul.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very wild region.
Mm-hmm.
Hence the name of the show, Wild Knot.
Wild Knot, exactly. and the name of the book, Wild at Heart,
mm-hmm.
it reminds us that we are animals as well, right? Like, follow our hearts, which is the more wild side that we have, right?
Mm-hmm. I think it's easy to misinterpret that, to take it too far, that wildness, that animalistic side of human beings. So we have to be careful to clarify that's not what Eldridge is getting at, nor is it a particularly virtuous thing, those animalistic, way to take it.
Yes.
But there is a wildness in the sense of passion.
Yes.
Right. That it passion and desire speak at a level I think that reason can have insight into, but that reason does not. Govern
Father,
in a sense.
Do you know nothing about? I'm sure Victor knows. Do you know nothing about this last weeks about the Trans Mountain pipeline expansion protests
in
Burnaby Mountain to protect wilderness?
Right.
Do you know about that?
I followed it a little bit.
What do you think? Like, do you think these protesters are like too radicalist, like too they exaggerate? Oh, it's right to stay there and don't give up. Like,
I don't know enough to comment with certainty. I would say just in general, it's a difficult balance to strive for, where we have, as the Lord said, dominion over the earth. Again, not to dominate, but to govern and to rule well creation and so we have to use creation. But in a respectful way, in a way that is respectful to the goodness that is there. So this specific crisis, I can't really speak to.
Yes. And Victor, what do you think about it? You live there, so I think
I live on the mountain. Yeah, I love it. Right. So well, I mean, I always believe in we need to be obedient to the law of the day and stuff, and people going there and expressing their opinion legally and in a way like that. I mean, I admire people's passion. I love the environment. My background's in environmental sciences, so it's definitely an issue that I'm passionate about. I also believe, biblically, we have that dominion and the word there, like Shema, which is like the original Hebrew words there in the beginning of Genesis, and sort of it's more like guard and protect. I really see Earth as God's good gift to us, and that sustains us, looks after us, and so. Like if you gave me a gift, Valerio, if I threw it and crumpled it up and threw it away, you would I'd be saying, I don't really care about your gift. And I think in the same way, if we treat the earth in a poor way, maybe we're saying something about God's gift. You know, I think it's a beautiful gift he's given us.
Yes.
And so we need to look after it for us, future generations. But obviously, all of us, by just being here, do make use of it. And so I don't think we're going to make use of it in a way that's make the best we possibly can.
Yes. Yeah. I read, actually I want to read again, but because it's not easy. In Italian, I read it, but still it's not easy. The book of Charles Darwin, The Origin of Species. Did you read it?
I certainly have studied his theories and stuff during my university career. So, yeah,
and during the reading of this book, I did a lot of questions by myself, like, what about the coexistence between creation and naturalism, which is a big topic. Like, still now, there are people that doesn't believe in both together, or there are people that say no, that's not true, because, for example, there are many scientists, like. Galileo Galilei, he was a Christian and he was a scientist in the same time. So, but there are still people that are for evolutionary philosophy, and they don't think that can run beside creationism. But I'm totally both, because I believe in God. I'm a Christian person. And in the same time, I do a lot for environment, and I love Charles Darwin's book, and I think without faith, I can't believe in what I read in that book.
Well, certainly, I think it takes a lot of faith to believe everything came from nothing, because that is hard; it's never been demonstrated. And perhaps even more faith than believing in a God who created and started things. That was a starting point. So definitely, I think those who have that worldview have a lot of faith in terms of nothing coming to something. And I just, when I look around at the beauty that surrounds us, I just think, wow, somebody must have created this. I mean, I look at a chair or a table, and I think, hey, somebody made this, somebody created it, right? And I look at the complexity and beauty of life, and for me, I just say, wow, there's a creator too, as I would look at a chair and I could see creation in that.
Yes, I totally agree. I think that's part of what John Eldridge is getting at in his title, Wild at Heart, is that wilderness, the wild, somehow connects us with the creator, with the one who created it. And so many people go into the wilderness to find God, to encounter in a spiritual way the one who created this beauty and this wildness and the ferocity even of nature. So I fully agree that for me, I look at creation, I look at the beauty, I look at the vastness, the near infinite creation, and it's like a lens pointing to the one who created it.
Yes. The next week on Tuesday, I will talk about natural food and natural products versus genetically modified organism, GMO, and engineering, genetical engineering. I will have here guests that will talk about that. There are not still like scientists proof that genetically modified organism is bad for health and create cancer and death, but there are some information that we can see in internet, some images of on animals experiment that can prove this. But anyways, has religious, what do you think about this? Like, do you think GMO can be useful for like poor countries like African countries or South Americas, where the food, where people can't buy food and GMO is very cheaper? Or you think it's not a good way, like, can be other solutions?
Well, food security was part of my master's thesis, and so I really think we need to be doing better as society in making sure that there's food is equally distributed. I mean, we've got plenty of food on this planet. We just waste so much of it. So I think more of the issue is like wasting what we currently have. I mean, and also then when it comes to the GMO topic, and I'm no expert in it, but I think it's actually a lot more complex than just GMO bad, GMO good. A lot of research, some says some of the ways it can be done, and making like seeds sterile and all that, and then selling them to poor in different African nations. I have problems with that, because I think then you force them, connecting them to a system and requiring certain nutrient intake. And I know I've seen when I grew up in South Africa and Zimbabwe, and I saw that come into Zimbabwe, where people traditionally use the seeds, replant them the next year, and they can't do that anymore. And now they are caught in a system that just to produce income. And I think we shouldn't be taking advantage of the poor in that way. And I don't think that's fair, and it's not helping the system. It might help some shareholders some way, but I think that is, our view is problematic, and not showing love to our neighbors and those who are in most in need. And so those aspects of GMOs I do have problems with, but there's a lot of, there's no one GMO method. There's a number of things happening. But I think we've got to be careful thinking about how are we expressing love to those around us? And is this helping or hurting? And at the same time, is it helping and hurting the environment that ultimately supports people on Earth? So we need to work out those topics. And they're not simple. I mean, you're going to have a whole show about it next week. But I do think we need to be thinking about
it. Yes.
I think part of loving creation is also loving people means also that we need to sometimes care for creation. And the way we don't care for creation often hurts people. So I think those two are also connected at some level.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And what about you, Father? What do you think about this?
Yeah, I certainly don't have the expertise on GMO, on the controversy in itself, but I think the whole conversation about bringing virtue into the marketplace, or the loss of virtue in the marketplace, is well worth having, and certainly something that Pope Francis has been bringing up again and again is the brokenness in our economic system, that we've built an entire system on greed, you know, on self-interest.
Yes.
And on me trying to get rich. And the Pope has said again and again, good will not come from this. You cannot have everyone looking out for their own self-interest, operating out of greed, and expect somehow good to come out of it.
Yes.
That a lot of the injustice and inequality in the world arises out of this inherent self-interest.
Yes.
That undergirds so much of the economic system.
Yes. Thanks. And I think also, just next to my home where I live now, in Vancouver, has opened just a few weeks ago, a small store that they sell completely organic food and organic products. And they're trying to, it's a challenge, they're trying to keep price lower as possible, respect the other's place, because the problem is that the organic food is very expensive. And but when I go in that store, like, I can see, like, respectful for creation, and because, you know, I don't think GMO system respect creation and nature and wilderness, because even the consequence on the agriculture on the nature, it are very they transmit, for example, the how can I explain in English, like the fish in the farm that are fed by GMO food.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they can infect the disease and the bacteria to wild fishes, because the farm fishes are in the ocean. They make farm fishes in the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And they can, mm-hmm. often the fishes can go to infect to the other fishes in the ocean, right? It's complicated.
I think we have to be careful. There's a little bit of misinformation,
I mean,
about GMOs and even about fish farms.
I would explain it better in Italian language. My English is very poor, but I hope next week we can make our dear listeners to understand better this about this topic. Is very important.
Mm-hmm. I believe so.
So backing to our interview, Pastor Victor, you also brought here a nice song by Gangur,
mm-hmm.
Beautiful Things.
Absolutely, yeah.
Out of the dust, you
Did you hear the news on the radio today? People have agreed to give their love away. I can't wait to be there alive. I know, no. Politicians have to be come around if you are ready. Oh, venga amigo, mire mi vadila, if you are ready. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Every day, and then I'll know you feel the rhythm of love, love, love. Whoa, I can't wait to be there in line. No, 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 no. Whoa, doobie, 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 doobie.
Find himself alone, calling to the darkness for an answer that he's never known. Yeah, isn't it amazing how God can take a broken man? Yeah, let him find a fortune, let him ruin it with his own two hands. He climbs on up the hill, on the rock on which he stands. He looks back at the crowd, he looks down at his hands, and he says, I am a difference maker. Oh, I am a difference maker. Oh, I am the only one that speaks to him. And I am the friendliest of friends of God.
Need to Brace is a band is singing a difference maker, and right now on a line should be with us. I have the pleasure to introduce Father Abbott from Mission City. Hi, Father.
Good afternoon, Valerio.
How are you?
Doing very well.
I had the chance to be there last week. And after a conference on Sunday morning, two Sundays ago, I was impressed about your conference that you were talking about multiculturalism. And just right today, here Father Brian picked this UBC is the UBC official new UBC magazine, and they're talking about religion on campus at UBC and about multiculturalism. So
yes.
I said, let's interview for a few minutes Father Abbott about that. What do you feel to just, which kind of message you feel to give to our dear listeners and UBC students about that?
About multiculturalism?
Yes.
Well, very briefly, I think when we think of multiculturalism, inevitably we also think of a certain sharing of values that occurs in the meeting of cultures. Multiculturalism is another way, a very positive way of speaking about it, is by saying that it is the phenomenon where cultures meet. And when we speak of cultures meeting, I think all of us bring certain presuppositions to cultural meetings, whatever the depth of them. And we are also aware of the difficulties involved in the exchange of cultural values and truths, so to speak. So that's what I was trying to offer the students that day, and I still think it's a very important part of our own Canadian scene to know some of these presuppositions that we bring as human beings. They're not often spoken of, the presuppositions. For example, if multiculturalism was a bad thing, or if it was something that didn't work, it wouldn't occur as frequently as it does in Canada, or in a policy, or in a government policy, etc. So it presupposes there's a potential universality in every culture, that there is an opening in each culture to meet the other. And that common truth of humanity alive in them tends to this union of cultures, of people. People make up cultures. It tends to the people meeting. So that'll be like the second presupposition. The third one is that the maturity of a culture lies in its ability to give and to receive. Not indiscriminately, but to give of itself and to receive what makes it more human, and to give what has been time-tested in itself. And then the other presupposition that we bring with us is that in this phenomena, in this experience of multiculturalism, we experience ourselves a power to develop further. So there's this presupposition that cultures coming together can develop further. And finally, that our own culture, whatever it may be, can in some way be touched by something in another culture that purifies it, that allows it to see more clearly. And so cultures can adapt themselves better to the deepest truths about the human person. So that's also a presupposition that we bring to the dialogue within culture.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. The university is a really big place of multiculturalism, especially UBC. Two more questions very quick. What do you think, is it possible to see a multiculturalism without religion, like spirituality, and is possible without or not? And also, what you think is can feel join each other, like even if we have hundreds different cultures each other, what can join us?
Mm-hmm. So are you finished?
Yes.
In all the known cultures of history, the most well-known cultures of history, religion has been at the center of the cultures, and religious values have given those cultures their inner cohesion, their inner unity, their values and the hierarchy of values, or the prioritizing of values. And it's also, the religion has given it its perception and its meaning for its existence. So this is the phenomenon of the long tradition over millennia of the most famous cultures of our civilization, or the known civilization of man. It's only recently that our culture, which we call such a secularized culture, has come to be a culture without religion. So this is a very European version of culture, and I think that the Christian faith that has suffered on account of it, because Europe in some way, while not being the cradle of Christianity, the East is the cradle of Christianity, yet Europe certainly, to a very high degree, applied Christian faith and Christian principles to its culture for many, many centuries. And so the phenomenon that we're experiencing now, where many countries, many governments are sort of ruling out the influence of religion from the mainstream culture, is a recent one. But I think what we are finding, too, on account of that absence, is a lot of fragmentation. There's a fragmentation of identity as a culture. There's a fragmentation of communities within the culture. There's a fragmentation also of the perception of knowledge. Like, there's you don't come to a university where you can experience a synthesis of all the branches of knowledge. So it's only a bigger vantage point than simple intellectual knowledge that gives you that unity. And that's what we call the religious sense, the sense of something transcendent, something more than the human being. So when cultures have that transcendent experience, then they begin to see all the various parts of cultural values and perceptions in a gradual unity. And that's what I meant when I said that the ancient cultures were able to bring to their cultural experience a certain unity of human living, so to speak. So what you asked, the second question you asked was, is it possible today for cultures to arrive at a meeting point? Did I understand you right?
Yes.
Okay. I would say the fact that all cultures are basically made up of human beings, that is the first meeting point, that as we meet as human beings, we find that our experiences of being human are not foreign to each other. And that's the basis of cultures beginning to come to some sort of broadening of their perception bigger than themselves, deepening of values that are not simply subjective, that we can actually share a common identity as human beings. However, and you know, my thoughts are not anything new here. The conferences that I gave were really an extended reflection on Pope Emeritus Benedict's great book, I felt, on culture, namely Truth and Tolerance. And there he said that, if I may quote one of his quotations, which I recall, he said, "Only in the interrelating of all the great works of culture can man approach the unity of the wholeness of his true nature." And then he also said another thing. He said, "The fundamental openness of all men to others and the agreement in essentials to be found even between those cultures farthest removed from each other can only be explained by the hidden way our souls have been touched by the truth."
Right.
And so this is where the meeting point comes. And sometimes I think the meeting point comes in the truth of the common experience we have as human beings. That becomes very truthful,
yes.
Very solid.
Yes. Father, thank you so much. I would ask you more questions, but actually I have to close the show in a few minutes and have here Father Brian and Pastor Victor from Catholic and Baptist Church. So I just 5 minutes to close this show, and I hope to have you during the show again in the future, because that's a very, very big topic and very interesting. Yeah. But thank you for your for your interview.
Thank you, Valerio. God bless.
Bye. Father, what do you think about that? And just if you have a few words, just to close the show, to say something about this Wild at Heart book.
Yeah, what a blessing to have Father Abbot John, Abbot of Westminster Abbey and Mission. He's certainly a wise and holy man. And great insight as well into the human person, and particularly the relationship with truth, that we are most human when we are in touch with that which is most deeply true of us. I think he would agree with a lot of what we've talked about with this book, Wild at Heart, that what John Eldridge offers is the insight into what is true and what is good about the human person, and in particular, in this case, about the masculine heart. And that truth is the key to freedom. And so I think a final word maybe about the book would be an invitation to get in touch with desire.
Right.
And for all of us, men and women, but particularly the men who are listening, to be open to those